minutes left down the road. And a heap of straw appeared in the garden. And I was about three or four then, I suppose. Well, it must have been because we moved up the village when I was five or six, five, yeah. And we were told Mr. Basham was going to thatch a house. Now, this Basham was a sort of a handyman of the village. He'd do anything. He was no relation to them Bashams, Cyril or Roger and them ones, or Ron and Emmett Belsham. But his name was Basham. And old Billy used to, well, always go back to the village with a donkey and cart and an old ladder tied on the side and bucket of dew hung underneath. He'd do anything. Build a brick wall, sweep a chimney, whitewash a house, do anything. Mr. Basham's going to thatch a house. Well, you know what it is. This heap of straw stood there weeks. And the boy next door and me used to play on it. You see, it was a little ladder. We used to climb up and sit on this little, on this heap of straw and jam something down, play out. So one afternoon, we didn't know, our Bill had gone by in his donkey car and he saw us. So he stopped down the road and come back. The next thing we knew, the little ladder appeared, disappeared from the side. And Bill looked up and hollered, "Come on down, hollered." So we said, "We can't get down, Mr. Basham. You've took the ladder away." He said, "Come on down, I tell you." "Said, we can't." He said, "Slide down on your backside and I'll catch you." And catch as he did with a bloody good ding round the ear hole. I think he was one of the first men I realised. They all kind of little boys, all men, ain't. Anyhow, Bill, as I said, was a handyman. He had to hang a gate there for the old postmistress across the road in those days. He'd been in concrete to post in and he'd made the gate. And at that particular time, she decided she wanted a wireless set. So she'd been in touch with the radio people in Alston. And they both come from Alston one evening. And he fixed this little radio set up for her. He drilled a hole through her windowsill, put a wire through, coiled it all up. And he said, "Now, Mrs. Claxton, what you've got to do is get somebody to get you a long pole, lash it up the end of the house and put this wire on the top." He said, "That's the aerial." He said, "And I'll come back Friday and tune it in for you." So she said, "All right." So when Bill come the next day to carry on with his gate, she said, "Have you got a long pole at home, Mr. Basham?" He said, "What for?" She said, "Well, I bought myself a wireless set," she said, "and I've got to have this wire put on a long pole so I can get a reception." He said, "I'll have a look when I go on to dinner." So when he came back from dinner, Bill brought this long ash pole and he lashed it up again the end of the house and put the wire on the top. And with great authority, he said, "That's plenty high enough." Anyhow, she couldn't wait to get closed that night. He went in and fiddled about with the knobs. And she couldn't get nothing at all, only a lot of crackling. And she got a young girl working for her, living in with her, who lived across the road here with a big family. She said, "Edie, go and get your brother Bert." She said, "Come and have a look at this wireless set," she said. And Bert was a young 18-year-old. He just started work not long down Whitlocks, and he was a bit of an academic type. So Bert come over and had a look, fiddled about, and Bert realised, he said, "I got a feeling," he said, "your aerial ain't high enough." He said, "I'm going to see what I can find." So he went, come home here, and he hunted amongst his father's poles, and Bert came back with a pole, which was the same length as old Bill's. But Bert had a bright idea to lash the two together. So he got a sash cord out the shop, lashed the two together and put it up on and went in. They could hear lovely reception, hear music coming from London. Of course, he was highly delighted. Old Bill rolled up the next morning to finish hanging his gate. "Morning, Mr. Basham." And he spotted his pole, you see. He said, "Who's been meddling in my pole?" So she said, "Oh," she laughed. "That's the worst thing she could have done." "Oh, your pole won't half iron up," she said. "Bertie Davison had to go and get another one," she said. "I can hear London music from London, singing from London, everything." So he chucked his tools back in the barrel. He said, "Will you get Bertie Davison to finish hanging his bloody gate?" He said, "Because I ain't." She said, "Oh, don't be like that, Mr. Basham. I shall," he said. And if I know my old woman spend another halfpenny in your shop, he said, I'll wring her bloody neck. And old Bill went. And yeah, there was another tale about old Bill. Squire Sampson, the squire of the village, lived up Barrack Hall. And he went and saw Bill one day, and he said, Bill, at the Barsham, he said, we're going to London for the day, me and the wife. He said, one of you do us a favour while we're out for the day, Bill said, if I can, sir. He said, I want all the chimneys swept up Barrack Hall. He's fed four of them. So Bill, he said, while we're out today, it'll be a good opportunity for you to do them. Bill said, all right, so what day do you want me? What time? One thing, another. He said, if you start the kitchen first, he said, Florrie the maid will clear up behind you as you go along. So, of course, Bill went in the kitchen and done the kitchen, and he went in the dining room, done the dining room chimney, and yeah, sitting room and done that. So when Squire Sampson come off the train and got home at night, all the fires were alight, the house was clean, he wouldn't know how Bill had been. So he thought, right, this is just right. He said, Florrie, Mr. Bassman, no trouble? She said, no. She said he'd done for dinner. She said, and I cleared up in the afternoon, got the fires going. So he said, oh, well, I'll pop down tomorrow and pay him. So he went to cut himself a couple of slices of ham for his breakfast for the bit that hung in the chimney. That ham wasn't there, gone. So he thought, the hell have they done of that? So he looked in a couple of cupboards either side of the fireplace, and he wasn't there, so he went in the kitchen and he said to Florrie, he said, what'd you do with the ham, Florrie, that hung in the dining room chimney? Oh dear, she said, I forgot all about it. He said, well, what did old Basham do with it? She said, I don't know. She said, can't you find it? She said, no, I've looked in the cupboards. I looked in the sideboard. I looked in other cupboards. I couldn't find it nowhere. Well, that's a funny bit, she said. He never mentioned it, she said, and I completely forgot it. He said, well, don't matter. I'll go down to Palm, he said, he'll tell me what he'd done with it. So he got on his horse. He rode down Church Lane. Old Bill was in the garden, messing about in his old sheds. So he said, I've come to square up with you, Mr. Basham. He said, thank you very much for doing the chimneys. He said, we didn't even know you'd been. He said, how much do I owe you? So Bill told him, he paid him. Well, by the way, he said, what did you do with the ham? He said, when you swept the dining room chimney. So Bill said, there won't no ham in it, don't you? He said, I don't think so. I said, sweep a chimney with a ham hanging in the chimney? He said, well, there must have been, man. He said, no, there weren't. He said, well, there was. Bill said, well, that weren't there when I swept it. Well, that's a funny bit. He said, good Florrie, he said, she never touched it. She forgot all about it. He said, well, I can tell you that, Squire. He said, that weren't in there when I swept it. So the Squire had to leave. Coming back through the village, we got a policeman live over the road then. So he stopped, old policeman, Howland his name was. He said, I've just been seen old Basham down the road. He said, he swept my chimney, he said, yesterday, while we got to London. He said, I went to get myself a bit of ham this morning, he said, and I don't hang in the chimney. He said, I've been down to see him. He said, he's swear blind. He said, he never see it. So old policeman said, oh, don't take those him, Squire, he said. I'll go down after that old bugger, he said. I know what old Bill is like. So he said, I'll leave it to you then, he said, yeah, so. Old policeman got on his bike and he went down to Bill. I just met Squire, he said, on a horse. Bill said, yeah, he just left there. He said, tell me he lost the ham at the dining room chimney. Yeah, Bill said, that's what he tell me. He said, come on, Bill, he said. Go and get it and I'll take it back. He said, nothing more, but he said, Bill said, I ain't got it. He said, well, you must have had it, man. He said, it hung there. Bill said, that morning in the chimney when I swept it. He said, don't think I'd be bloody fool enough to sweep a chimney with a ham hanging in, do you? So he said, well, he said, if you didn't take it, Bill, he said, look, I can get a search warrant easily. If you didn't take it, do you mind if I have a look in your sheds? Bill said, help yourself, get where you like. So old Alan went and he hunted in all old Bill's sheds and he come back. Bill said, well, have you found it? He said, no. Do you mind if I have a look in your house? Bill said, well, you'll have, he said, the house don't have nothing to do with me. He said, I'll go and see what the wife says. So he went in the house and he come back a few minutes later. He said, no, she said, she's made the bedroom, go where you like. The policeman went in, and there sat Mrs. Bashman in her wicker chair by the fire. Skirts all down to the ground, kept rocking backwards and forwards in his old chair. He said, there his mother, he said, I told Mr. Policeman here, and go where you like. She said, yeah, go where you like, upstairs, downstairs, where you like. So, yeah, well, he went upstairs, and he under the bed, all under the beds and so on. And he came down, and the old girl still kept poking bits of wood on the fire. So he finally had to give it up as a bad job. So he went up Barrack Hall, and he said to the squire, he said, he ain't got it, you know. He said, Mr. Basham ain't got that ham. He said, I've found it everywhere. He said, they even let me go in the house, Mrs. Basham, very good. I searched the house, ain't you now? He said, when did you see it last? Of course, old squire, he said, well, I reckon I had a, he said, I had a couple of slices before I went to church the other Sunday. He said, what do you mean the other Sunday? Well, about a fortnight ago. He said, you had any since then? He said, no. Well, he said, anybody could have took it. Well, he said, you had nobody in here. He said, ah, you don't know that, do you? He said, I don't think you can pin anything on Mr. Basham. He said, I reckon you'll have to give it up as a bad job. He said, because I ain't no good. He said, if I get a search warrant, I can't do the morning I've done. He said, and if you ain't seen it for a fortnight, he said, that could be anybody took. So that's what they done. They give it up as a bad job. And you may one day well know this. My grandfather lived next door to old Bill Basham. And that night when it got dark, there was a knock on the back door. My father went, my grandfather went. And there stood old Bill with a plate, with a bit of greaseproof plate right over the top. He said, there's four bloody good bits of ham on there. He said, I'll do your boys and my boys more bloody good than that old boy's handsomes. And I've heard my mother say, that the Christmas Eve, they was having jollifications in the chestnut. And old policeman was off duty and he walked in to have a drink and join in like. And he could see old Bill Barson was three sheets in the wind. And he thought, oh, get that out of old Bill now. He's had a drink or two. He said, Bill, he said, I'll buy you a quart of beer. Bill said, well, go and get it in and quick. He said, only I want to know one thing. He said, will you tell me who had Mr. Sampson ham? If I buy you a quart of beer, Bill said, yeah, you get the quart in, I'll tell you who had it. And eventually this quart of beer arrived and Bill took the top off and wiped the froth out of his nose. Now then, he said, what do you want to know? He said, I want to know who had Mr. Sampson's ham. He said, well, that's easy. He said, Mr. Sampson had it. He said, if he'd looked, he'd kept it. That was old Bill. He had an old fiddle he used to hang on with a bit of string on a beam. And Christmas time, if my grandfather and grandmother used to come up home, that sort of thing, he'd bring his old fiddle of him. He used to scrape away with his old fiddle, and we all used to sit round and sing. He used to look the old Sankey Moody hymns, did you know what I mean? Count your blessings, name them one by one, and they used to sit and sing, my old grandmothers and all of them. And he always used to finish up on a high note. My mothers used to say, you know when he's finished, because he finished on a high note. High note. Then he'd get the tin whistle out. And that piccolo, Annie Basham, Ron's daughter, Annie can get a tune out of it. And I don't know how old they are. Anyhow, when he died, he left the violin to Dolly, my wife. Why the hell he didn't leave it to me, I don't know, because she couldn't play on that. But she happened to say to him once, she had violin lessons at school. So he left her this violin. Well, I had it here, I didn't know a thing about a violin till I went gamekeeping over Cornshall End. And living in the cemetery, in the house bungalow near the cemetery in Cornshall End was my old music teacher, Joan Dare, her name was. And she walked her dogs along the road one day and I pulled up. She don't know me now because she taught me when I was a boy of 12 or 13. But she don't know me now, so I pulled up. I said, you don't know me now, Miss Dare? She said, yes, I do, Dick. I know you. So I said, I'll tell you what. I said, do you know anything about a violin? She said, what do you mean? Do I know anything about a violin? She said, I teach violin lessons to different students. I said, do you? She said, yeah. I said, well, I've got one. I said, I don't know how to tune it. I don't know what the note, what the wires are, what the strings are. And she said, I'm up your way on Mondays. She said, I'll call in and tune it for you after I've finished. I said, all right. I said, what time are you talking about? She said, well, anything from 7 till half past. So then she came on this particular night and she tuned this violin up. She said, righto, try it. I said, what do you mean try? Come on, shove it under your chin. God, I said, I can't get my fingers round on it. Come on, get exercising, she kept on. I said, it's no good. She said, well, I must admit, there's not many people over 50 want to start to learn a violin. Anyhow, she said, oh, she tuned it up. She had a little tune herself. She said, I'll come back again next Monday. And she came for about 2 or 3 years. Every Monday, she'd come in here, I'd get her a bit of supper. She'd been finished her students, she relaxed then. And then what she, I got so, well, how long did you endure that violin, Dolly?
Oh, a long time. Especially when we went up into that high bit.
Yeah, up the, yeah, what she called the third position. Dolly said, I endured it. And she said, no, you were just getting, she used to love to play the piano herself. And then I'd stand behind her and company her, you know, ordinary little songs like Drink to Me Only and that sort of thing. There was a knock on the door one night. So I was going to stop playing to get the knock. She said, keep playing. And we finished the piece we were doing and I went to the door. That was the gunsmith brought my gun back. So I said, oh, thank you very much. I've got the fiddle in me. No, I laid the fiddle down. I went, thank you very much. I said, I'm busy at the moment, Peter. I said, I'll come round and square up with you in the week. He said, all right. He said, I've got that back just in time, I know. I said, I don't know. He said, you'll be able to shoot that old cat you've got in there. But she said, oh, hell, we used to have some sport with her, didn't we, Dolly? She used to have 2 or 3 glasses of sherry. She sometimes went in. Bloody 3 sheets in the wind. Got to go back to Cornchaline. She left here one night. I left her in here sitting there talking to Dolly. There was snow on the ground and ice. I walked up the Green Man. Hadn't been in there about 30 minutes. And phone went and the landlord come. He said, Dolly on the phone. He said she's a bit concerned about Joan Dare. I said, why? He said, well, Joan said he was going to ring her up when she got home to make sure she got home safe. She said, it's been over 30 minutes. She should have been home by now. So I said, well, tell Dolly give her another 30 minutes. Her phone went again. You'll have to come home. We'll have to go and see where she is. She's probably gone in the ditch somewhere. So I came home and got my old van out. And we went all the way to Cornchaline. The bungalow was in darkness. Dolly said, there you are, she ain't home. I said, well, she ain't in the ditch. Could we look both sides of the road going, taking her steady. Anyway, we got out, and I went to her garage, and I could look through the crack. I said, well, her motor's here. Dolly said, you sure? I said, yeah. So we knocked the door, and all of a sudden, the curtain fell. What is it? What is it? Are you home all right? Of course I'm home all right, she said. But she couldn't hardly bloody stand. She'd been on the bottle once she got up. We went all that way. When I come to come out, damn me, my starter motor ain't jammed. Anyhow, I got an old adjustable spanner, put her in the end of the diamond hole, and then we got home all right from there. Poor old cow. Okay, coming home from hospital. My old mate, he's retired now, and he ain't got nothing to do, so I'll take you. And we said, right, we'll have lunch somewhere. And we stopped at Stoke Banana and the Angel. Do you know the Angel, Stoke Banana? And we stopped in there and had lunch. And we all 4 sat round the table sitting in the table. There was nobody. Another 4 was in the table join us, or near us. So as we got up to come away, one of these women said, excuse me, sir. I said, yeah. She said, don't you ever lose that lovely Suffolk accent, will you? So I said, I don't think there's a lot of chance now I'm over 80, do you? And she said, oh, she said, that's lovely. I said, there's only one snag goat. She said, what's that? I said, I don't live in Suffolk. Come from Essex. Well, I never. She said, well, you must have spent a lot of time in Suffolk. I said, no, not really. That was the end. Yeah. We went and done. When I was 17, Whitlock took a contract on of erecting searchlight sites all over East Suffolk, all around Stowmarket, Framlingham, and all up Southwold and that sort of thing, Blybra. Different farms, you know, there was a searchlight site about every 3 or 4 miles sort of thing. And Whitlock took the contract. They wouldn't let any of us boys go until we were 17. And I often think about it. When I got 17, they said, right, you can go up to Suffolk now. I had to go and join three that were on the finish of a site at Witten. Had already done one at Rushmere, and they were doing on the finish of one at Witten. Been there about a week, and we finished it. And the foreman lived in he was in lodgings in Debenham, but he had a hut in a meadow in Debenham. They rented a bit of meadow off of some farmer, and he had a hut in there which was his headquarters. I think I fixed him up with a phone, and he'd got all the sites where they'd got to be done, so we could ring up this hut and say, look, we're finishing at Witten. We lodged in Westerville. We're finishing at Witten on so-and-so. Send a lawyer in so we go to a new site. And yeah, when we finished at Witten, the lorry came and picked us up after lunch the next day. And we said to the lorry driver, he was in lodgings at Peasenhall. He's still alive, and he helped him over 90. And Jim Bunn said, that was a hell of a job, because there weren't a signpost up. Because I took them all down, didn't you? You had a damn good map to find your way around. Jim made me laugh. He said he pulled up one day, a couple of old boys were working beside the road. And he pulled up and he said, where's Charlesfield, mate? The bloke said, I don't know him. Never heard of him. So he said, I ain't talking about him. He said, I'm talking about a place. Well, he said, I still ain't heard of it. He said, I went round the corner. He said, bugger me, there was Charlesfield. 3 horse shows of Charlesfield, because that was all marked on the map. He said, no, bugger. Anyhow, we had to go. He picked us up. He said, where we got to go, Jim? He said, I'm going to take you to a little village called Dennington. He said, you've got a site to do it at Tannington. He said, but Tannington is only a little place. He said, Dennington is a bigger village. You stand more chance of getting lodgings in Dennington. Now, you imagine now, during the war, 1940, pulling in a little village in Suffolk, and 4 strangers looking for lodgings. Where the hell had you got to start? He dropped us outside the Queen's Head. It was a village square, similar to Topsfield. There was a pub called the Queen's Head, an Admiral's pub. So he took 4 bicycles off the back of the lorry, 4 toolboxes, 4 suitcases with all our worldly goods in, sort of thing. Well, cheerio together, he said, you got to do the site at Tannington. He said, Tannington Hall. So he said, good luck to you. So we said, where the hell are we going to start? The pub was shut because that was one opening time. I mean, generally a pub was a good place to get your lodgings. So I said, the post office over there. So we went over to the post office, all 4 of us. And the poor old girl behind the bar, behind the counter in the post office, I reckon we must have frightened the life out of her. Because she said, oh no, I don't know anybody in. Dennington put lodges up. Well, I don't suppose she did she? No, no, I don't know anybody in. She came round from behind the counter. She opened the door and let's just say, come on, get out. No sooner we out, she shut the door and the bolts went on. So I shouted through the letterbox, where are we likely to get lodgings? So she said, try up the council house, she said. I said, do you know anybody got a spare bedroom? She said, yeah, number 2 and number 4. So we looked, we said, well, let's try number 2 and number 4. There was 2 blokes in their 20s, and me and my old mate lived across the road. We went to school together. We were the 2 17-year-olds. They decided to take one each, you see. Couldn't let us two boys be together. The man that spoke from Yeldon and went up to number two and knocked the back door on this woman, come a youngish woman. They were looking for lodgings. She said, oh, I don't take lodgers in. So we said, can we explain what we're here for? Because it was getting dark then. We said, we've come to put a searchlight site up at Mr. Harvey's farm at Tannington Hall. And we're looking for lodgings because we're due to start tomorrow. She said, you're leaving it late, aren't you? We said, well, we only just got here. So she said, well, my husband ain't in. My husband's not home yet. He'll be home at 5. So we said, can we come back at 5? She said, if you like. So we went out the gate. We met the other two. They'd been to number 4. They'd got lodgings, they had. Oh, yeah, the woman said she'd put us up. So we went back to the pub, picked our bicycles up and cases and toolboxes. And this we came in the road, we saw the light go in number 2 on a bike. All right, we went round again. We explained to her husband then what we were doing. He said, somebody said they were going to put a searchlight site up the road. He said, how far is it? He said, about 2 miles. So she said, how long are you going to be? How long do you want lodgings for, bed for? We said, oh, about a week. It turned out to be about 8 weeks to finish. So she said, well, I don't mind a week. We said, we've got our ration books. You can have our ration books, but what you want is a packed lunch and something to eat when we come home, say 6 or 7, something like that. He said, well, I think I can manage that. So we said, all right. So she said, go and get your things. So we went. And they got no running water, no electric head in those days. I mean, like it was here, just more or less same sort of finish. She seals up the bedroom. So we arranged to meet our other two in the pub, about 9. Anyhow, she said, what about something to eat? We said, no, we're all right. We thought we ain't going to disturb and have anything to eat. We thought we'll get a pack of the chips down the pub or something like that. Or some cheese biscuits and keep us going till the morning. So off we went down the pub and we said, well, we got an inmate, all right. We come back and we went to bed. Next morning, we had a breakfast before we went. She said, there's your packed lunch in our tins we've got. And that's how we went on. We was there about 8 weeks. The whole village turned out to see us off, come to finish. We had to go down the pub every night about 9. We got to know the locals well, played darts with them, had a rare bloody time with them. The last night we were there, they'd got a piano in the room, and I went and got on the piano. They had our lover sing song in that pub. And yeah, about 34 years afterwards, I'd never been to that village since we left there in 1940. And we were in the Chestnut. And bloke who kept a pub at Yeldon and said, why don't you two have a few days off? We said, yeah, good idea. So I said, well, I've got to go and get an occasional licence for a dance at Edgecombe Village Hall on Tuesday. We'll go off after the court, after I get my licence on Tuesday. So he said, all right. So off we went just before dinner. We said, where should we go, Dice? Let's go to Yarmouth. Because I finished up in the Navy at Yarmouth. So I knew Yarmouth fairly well. So we said, all right, we'll cut across country. So we had a lunch at Stowe Market in the middle of the afternoon. I found myself coming down the hill into Dennington. I thought, well, what the hell? I said, I didn't realise we should come into Dennington. I said, I'm going to see Mrs. Davy. They're still in number 2. And we pulled up outside number 2 and Dolly said, oh, well, come round, you go. So there was a woman standing on the door talking. I said, Mrs. Davy still live here? She said, yeah. Said, Martha, somebody want to see you. She come to the door. She said, I said, you don't know me now. She said, that's the boy Dick, isn't it? I said, yeah. Well, damn it, boy, she said, you little bugger. She said, I thought you'd been drowned because her neighbour was in the Navy and I met him once. So after that, we used to go twice a year, take old girl out for lunch. And have a hell of a, you know, she used to please as hell to see us. Didn't the Harveys by the pub in, no, not Tannington.
Laxfield.
The next one. Laxfield. Because Mrs. Davy, who we stayed with, She was a Laxfield girl. She was born and brought up in Laxfield. There was a pub in Tannington that's closed, been closed years, called the Horseshoes. We come out of the hall one night, called out. It'd been a hot day. I said, Christ, I could do with a pint. They all said, come on, let's go in the Horseshoes. We went in, there was an old boy in there. So he said, 4 pints of bitter, please. And you know what it was in those days. Hadn't got pumps or nothing, had they? Had to go out the back and draw it from the cask. He came in with 1 pint at a time. So put this 1 pint down on the counter and went off with another empty mug. We all looked at one another as much as say, who's gonna have the first pint? So I said, well, look, if you lot ain't going to grab, I am, and I picked it up. By the time he bought the fourth pint, I'd emptied mine, I pushed the empty mug forward. Ha ha, so you might, matey, say, I ain't coming these tricks of me, he said, I've already bought four. He said, you ain't going to make it, you've only had three. He said, I'm very wide out of you lot. But one of the girl Harveys, or a woman connected with the Harveys, was in these, right in these dangly ones, about, did anybody know anything about, something about Tannington? And I rung Mrs. Davey up and I said, did you see that? She said, yeah, I saw her. I said, well, tell this woman that I was working up, done that searchlight site there. So anyhow, Mrs. Davey rung up. She said, I've been in touch with her. She's got to come down to Bocken, near Braintree. Is that far from you? I said, no. 4 or 20 minutes ride. She said, she'd like to come and see. I said, well, she can do. I said, tell you what, Martha. I said, get her to bring you so you see where I live. She said, all right. So she did. She came in here and she dropped Martha off. She went off to Bocken and came back. And then she really didn't want to know anything much. So whether she wrote anything, I don't know. Lunch at Framlingham Crown, which was a trust house 40, where we used to take Mrs. Davey when we took her out. She used to sit there with a white napkin. She'd say, my friends will never believe this. And yeah, we got to Dennington. I tried to time it, so we get to Dennington King's Head at opening time, 12 o'clock. And we got there at 12, and there was Ringles all along the front of the pub. They pulled up in little carts, little donkey carts, I call them, tied their horse to these Ringles, and in they came. And I went in, and I tried to say to one, I used to lodge here in 1940, there was none of the buggers interested. I had a job to get up to get a pint, because they wouldn't move away from the little bit of bar, and I thought, God, hell, you lot ain't changed a bloody bit. when we'd finished the site there, and Frank, he died last year over the road, we went in the church to have a look round. We ain't got nothing to do. We knew we'd got to move at the Wednesday. We went in the church and had a look round in the church. And when we come out, we couldn't get out. The door was locked. The hell, we said, the hell are we going to do? We tried both porches, both doors were locked. There was a little vestry door that was locked. And we said, we'll be in here all night. I said, well, we got to let people know where somehow. We went up to the belfry, and there was one bell rope hung there. So I got hold of this bell rope and pulled it, and the bell rung. He said, you can't ring it. I'll think there's a bloody invasion. I said, well, we've got to get attention. So we pulled this bell for 5 minutes. Nothing happened. Then I went back again, and I had another 5 minutes on the bell. And we let it go again, and we got near the port. We could hear the voices outside and the door being unlocked. The bloke opened it with a policeman standing beside him. What are you doing in here? We said, well, we're having a look around. We got locked in. He was a verger. So policeman said, where do you come from? Of course, we thought, we'll stir him up. Oh, down in Essex. Well, what are you doing up here? We said, work up here. What doing? We said, well, don't think we're allowed to tell you. Of course, you can tell me. He said, I'm a policeman, aren't I? So I said, do you know Mrs. Davey live up Tannington Road? He said, no. The verger said, I do. I said, well, we lodged with Mrs. Davey. What doing? I said, we just done a searchlight site up at Mr. Harvey's at Tannington. Oh, he said, well, I better confirm this. He lugged us back to Mrs. Davey. And of course, you say, yes, they're here all right. But if we hadn't pulled that bell, we'd have been there at his church all night. And when we got a move, they said, you'll have to bite. They had one who I was lodging with. He said, Dick, he said, take your dinner with you. Bike to Debenham and see Arthur Hunt and tell him we're finishing here on Tuesday. We should like the lorry on Wednesday or Thursday to move us to a fresh site. Well, yeah, I said, yeah. So he said, here's a map, look. He said, I reckon it'll take you an hour more or less to get there. I don't know how far it was. Anyhow, off I went on my bike, took me dinner with me. And I got along the road, been riding about half an hour, about. And there was a green grass verge in the middle of the road. One road went right and one left. And I thought, now, which one do I go? And there was an old boy working up the one on the right, about 50 yards up, with a wheelbarrow side of the road. So I biked up to him and... morning, mate. He said, morning. I said, am I on the right road to Debenham? Can you tell me if I'm on the right road, Debenham? He said, I don't know. I said, what do you mean you don't know? He said, I don't know. Don't know where Debenham is, he said. I said, come on. He said, no, I don't. I said, look, mate, don't bugger about it. I said, I want to get to Debenham. He said, well, I tell you, I don't know. I've never heard of it. I said, dear, have you heard of Mr. Harvey's farm at Tannington Hall? So he said, yeah. I said, well, we've just put a searchlight site up there. We've just finished. I've got to go to Debenham to tell the foreman we're ready to move. So he didn't answer. So I said, will you please tell me if I'm on the right road to Debenham? So he said, well, he scratched his head. Well, he said, if I was you, he said, I should keep on this road. And we had another one. You're talking about that sale yard at Wickham Market. We had another one in lodgings at Camsey Ash. And they'd done the site in Camsey Ash. And they hadn't quite finished it. They'd got to start a new one at Tunstall. And they decided, being they'd got good lodgings in the pub at Camsey Ash, they'd bought the Tunstall and they're looking for fresh lodgings. So they said to Guy Wilkin, he used to live at Yeldon, he's dead now. They said to Guy, you finish this one at Camsey Ash tomorrow, Guy. They said, you'll be done for dinner. Then you can come and join us at Tunstall. So Guy said, all right. Anyhow, he didn't roll up at Tunstall. When they got back to the pub at Camsey Ash, early evening, there sat Guy in the tap room, a pint of beer in front of him. So they thought, oh, I'll make no bones about it. They said, did you finish, Guy? He said, yeah. Took you longer than you thought. He said, no, I'd done 11. They said, thought you was coming to Tunstall. He said, I couldn't find a blinking place. What do you mean, couldn't find it? He said, oh, I couldn't. He said, oh, I ain't got a clue where to go. He said, I asked six different blokes, he said, working on the road. Am I on the right road to Tunstall? He said, not one of the bugs had heard of it, he said, I thought, sod you, I know the way back to Camsey Ash, I'm going to be back. He said, I was back here for 3 o'clock. Them old boys in Suffolk couldn't tell you nothing. I'd never done any public speaking at all, never even dreamt of it. And I had a phone call one day from this woman's name. She said, I've been told to get in touch with you, Mr. Ruggles. Would you like to come to our harvest supper? So I said, where? She said, Castle Camps. So, this was months before that did happen. So I said, when is it? And she said, October so-and-so. And this was about April time, so I said, yeah, I don't mind. I said, I've never done that sort of thing. You know, I said, how the hell did you get, who told you about me? She said, oh, never mind, who told me? Will you come? So I said, yeah. I said, give me a ring about a fortnight before to make sure. I that's all right. She said, all right. I said, by the way, what's your name? She said, Mrs. Norden. That was David's wife, was it? He did now, and he was butcher. Is she still about? Is she? So anyhow, about a fortnight before the date, she rang. She said, you all right for so-and-so? It's your Saturday night. So I said, yeah. So on the Sunday before, men, we had a ride out to Castle Camp. So I said, whereabouts is the hall? She said, behind the chapel. Oh, is it? Yeah. So I said, how many are going to be there? So she said, we can only sit 54. Oh. She said, there'll be four men. Oh, I said, well, the rest all ladies. She said, yeah. That's our ladies' group. Oh, I see. Anyhow, we rode out to Castle Camp. I said, there's the hall, we can see it, see? So we turned around and come back. Had a drink in the horseshoes at Helen's and made our way home. And anyhow, on this particular night we went in, and there were bloody women all over the place. There was a parson from Linton, whoever he was. There was a bloke, I think he played the organ in Castle Camp Church sometimes. Can't think what his name was, tall fella. There was another bloke there who used to come round with Liverpool Victoria Insurance. He used to call on my mother, so he recognised me. And I thought, oh, bloody hell. Anyhow, they started off by singing The Farmer's Boy. Somebody played a piano, and they sung The Farmer's Boy. And there was the glasses upside down on the table. And all of a sudden, the voice behind me said, would you mind turning your glass up, Mr. Ruggles? I thought, I know the next question. Would you like white or red wine? You know what they said? Would you like orange squash or lemon squash?
I thought I'd have had hysterics.
She said, the look on your face, she said, my God, she said, your face dropped. Old Linton Parson, he said, but, and I've just carried on, more or less saying, about old Bill Bashman and them, and different other bits. And I had about over half an hour, I said, I think that's enough. No, you carry on, I said. Their old faces and their necks were red where they'd been laughing. Our parson, when I sat down, he said, do you go to church at all, Mr. Ruggles? And I said, yes, as a matter of fact, I'm church warden at Thomasville. Oh, he said, how lovely. I wish I'd got a church warden like you, he said. Yeah. They were fantastic, though, they were. That old group band there. But then the word must have come round because I went to Castle Camps Village Hall and spoke to the gun club. I then had a good guest at the football club dinner. And what else did I go for? Some other one. I know they all finished up down at Horseshoes, down at Thingme. Good old times, though. Good old gang, yeah. And I was doing the auction. There was an exercise bike come up. And I was halfway, you know, taking bits. And the farmer, Ted Mortlock's brother, Dennis, he said, tell him I tell when you went into the hospital. And I looked at him, I thought, well, what are you talking about? Exercise bike. I said, oh, yeah. I said, I had to go to Helton Hospital for physio treatment a couple of 3 years ago. I said, and I got in here one morning to have my physio treatment took. And I said, the woman said, we haven't got your cubicle ready yet, Mr. Ruggles. Go and get on the exercise bike. And I said, she led me through the hall. There were two low cycles with two old ladies sitting laying back like I am with their legs going round. There was a tall one in between. So I got up on the tall one and started pedalling and went on my right, looked up, proper health. What's your mate? She said. So I said, oh, look round the other one. You all right together? They said, yeah. Yeah, they were going slowly like this there. So I stopped pedalling. I said, look here, you two. If you'll come for bike riding me, you've got to go sharp what you're doing now. And she looked up this one. She said, if you're in a hurry, mate, she said, you'll bugger off. And all the people in the cubicles, they burst out laughing. And I told her at the village hall, that, oh, the parson clouds his ears up. Have you got Don again? Yeah, Mr.
Yeah,
Whitlock. Whitlock said, Mr. Whitlock had a, he rented a farm at, in Sibyl Edigan. He rented a shooting rights, rather. Stratton Parker farmed it. And he took over the shooting rights from somebody who was getting a bit on in years and didn't want it. So he started rearing a few pheasants up there. His gardener would rear about 100 down at Yeldham, and then we would take them up and put them in pens in the wood, and an old pensioner would sort of look after them while I was up there. And apparently this old pensioner got the... He lived with his son, who was cowman. The cowman, his son got the sack, so they had to move out. Now, Carl Whitlock advertised in the Helster Gazette for a part-time keeper at Pepper's Estate. And we spoke about it, you see, because we used to... The beaters used to go from Yeldham, from the works. Anybody volunteer for a day out beating, we used to love that, to get out. Now, of course, there was this advertised for a part-time keeper. That was in 2 weeks running. I went walking by the office on a Monday morning, and I heard Dick. I looked up, and there was Carlton beckoning me. So I went in. How did he want? He said, I suppose you've seen I'm advertised for a part-time keeper at Pappas. So I said, yes, sir, but I'm afraid I don't know anybody. Oh, he said, I've got loads of applicants here. Look, he picked up a pile of letters on his desk and dropped them. I thought, oh, he want me to bet somebody, you see. So I said, no. He said, well, don't trust none of these. He said, I wonder if you'd like a job. I said, the hell no, I don't know nothing about gamekeeper. He said, I don't think it'll take you long to learn. I said, no, I said, honestly, you shook me. I said, I don't know a thing about it. He said, well, sir, I don't think it'll take you long. I said, anyhow, why me? Why choose me? I mean, he's got 500 people working here. Well, he said, they tell me you're the biggest poacher in Topsfield, he said, and I say a good poacher make a good gamekeeper. I said, let me inform you, sir. I said, I ain't been had up for poaching yet. He said, well, shall we say it's a matter of time? So I said, well, if you like. He said, look, go up there. He said, go home to dinner, don't you? I said, yeah. He said, see what the wife says. Won't make any difference to your money. He said, perhaps you do a half a week up there and a half down here. So I said, oh, I'll see what the wife said lunchtime. So he said, come and see me this afternoon. So I went back in the afternoon. So he said, yeah, if you want to go, you go. I said, all right. So I went back. I said, yes, I'll have a go, sir. Good. He said, go and see the works manager. He said, tell him you're going to have a half a week up there and a half back here. So I said, all right. So I went and saw works bloke, Mr. Hunt, his name was. Me and New Arthur Hunt, well, so I told him, he said, you're a fool, ain't you? I said, why? He said, you won't last 2 months. I said, what do you mean? Don't be a bloody thing. He said, form the shot out of you, get up there. I said, don't talk so silly. He said, you won't be able to leave him alone. So I must have had a fair reputation, mustn't I? Anyhow, I said, look, can I have a fortnight up there full time? So that I can find my way about. He said, yes, if you like. He said, we're not very busy. So I went up the next... the governor said, go and get some cartridges. You got a gun, he told Taylor. I said, yeah, go and get some cartridges. So I had to bike up. That was from here to Sibyl Edigan. I went biking up with a gun on my shoulder and a strap on my back. And I also remember going in the wood for the first time. The men were... clamp of potatoes on the side of the field. They all glared at me with their mouths open. And I just said, morning. Not one of them spoke. It was about six of them, I think, covering these potatoes up. All right, and they thought, who the hell is he, you see? Anyhow, well, I said to Hunt, I can have a fortnight. He said, yeah, do you know I was up there? I forget how many years, and I never did go back to the works anymore. Not once did I go back to the works. Nobody said anything, and I kept up there the whole time. I went, he said, I've got two farmers that join us. He said, I can go on their land, go and introduce yourself to them. So I went down to introduce myself to one. I took the old boy who hadn't quite left then, and he introduced me. As we came away, one farmer called him back. So when he caught me up, I said, what do you want, Arthur? He said, he said, I've got to tell you, he don't expect to see you on his land with a gun on your arm. I said, what the hell can he tell me so? He said, well, that's what he told me to tell you. So we walked up the hill to the next farm, and I introduced myself in to this chap, this farmer, Mr. Whitlock's new gamekeeper. So he said, oh, yeah. Do you know where your boundary is? So I said, no, not yet, Mr. Hale. He said, well, I advise you to find out where it is as quickly as possible and keep on it. I thought, well, that's a bloody fine start, this is. Because Carlton said, you don't want to worry about the others what join us. He said, they ain't on them much good. Well, I knew one, because I had drunk with him sometimes up here. And the next day, I thought, I'll go around and see old George. So I thought, I'll learn it. I hid my gun under a stab in the ditch. Went walking in his farmyard, and he looked up. He said, what the hell are you doing here? So I said, I've gone with my new keeper, I said, and I thought, means we're neighbours, I'd come and introduce myself. He got down off the tractor, he said, I'm bloody pleased to see you. Come in and have a drink. So when I saw the company, he said, well, how'd you get on with Mr. Hale and Mr. Minor? I said, not very good. I said, well, I got on better with George Lewis. What, him? I said, yeah, he hadn't had a drop of whiskey with him. Well, I'm a bugger, he said. And before long, I'd got round all the farmers what joined us, all their land for nothing. Walk over their land for nothing. That was very good, that was. We had a nice little shoot up there. We used to have all title people come, you know, from Robert O'Dean from West Ratton, and old Rab Butler, and Sir John at Payne's Hall, Finchingfield, and Lord Buxton, and all them used to come up there. We killed over 1,000 one day up there, 500 acres. That is much little shoot. Everything, my feelings came first in everything. Carlton said, because when I come, he said something about, I know you ain't afraid to tell anybody off. Because when I came home on leave from the Navy once, I used to bow down to you and see my old mates he'd work with, you see. So I got in one shed, and John Ellis from Ridgewell I'd worked with, and Aubrey Dice from Edigan. I brought out a packet of 20 woodbines, HM ships only on. I did really, didn't smoke. I suppose I pretty much wanted to show off with these, I suppose. Anyhow, offered them a cigarette each, and they took them. And we all three lit up. And got halfway down these cigarettes, and the door at the bottom of the shed opened. That was Carl Whitlock came in. Came straight across to us. There I stood with me fag in my mouth. Would you mind putting a cigarette out? He said, we don't allow smoking here now. I said, oh, I didn't know. He said, well, no, I don't suppose you did. He said, you weren't to know. So he went, carried on, walked out the shop. So I said to these two, they're along with this no smoking business. They said, oh, about 4 months. Anyhow, they'd nipped theirs out beside them, you see, when they saw the door open. They went around the rest of the shops. When I came back up the yard, Carl Whitlock was filling his motor with an old petrol pump, an old ratchet thing, you know. So I thought, come on, Ruggles, here's your chance. So I walked across. I said, I'm awfully sorry about that cigarette, Mr. Whitlock. Oh, he said, that's all right, forget it. He said, I told you, weren't I know. I said, only I think I ought to tell you. I said, I've just come back from going across the North Atlantic in the 90 ship convoy on a tanker. I said, there are 45 tankers in the middle of these 90 ships, all empty, all going to America. I said, we loaded up with 10,000 tonne of oil. I said, and they split the convoy up coming back, 2 45s instead of 90. I said, we went right up to Greenland to get away from the U-boats. I said, on that tanker we couldn't smoke, afraid to. I was having, I thought, being as I was on solid land, I thought that would be fairly safe to smoke. Oh, I'm awfully sorry, he said. I didn't. I said, well, you weren't an announcer. I thought, darn, Rogers, put that up your face. I said, you weren't an announcer, were you? And I turned and walked along the hill. He said, excuse me a minute. Turned around and he said, you're Rogers from Coppersfield, aren't you? I said, yeah. So he said, I want to ask you how long leave you got. He said, but the best of luck. I said, thank you, sir. He said, I shall inquire from Charlie Hardy. Charlie lived up here and worked down there. How are you getting on from time to time? I said, thank you, sir. I'd be very kind of you. He said, I am awfully sorry. And I said, you weren't to know. And he reminded me about many times. He said, I thought, my God, mate, you've been put in your place today. We had a couple of friends in, they'd never seen it. We put it on, and Roy Wetlock was there. He proposed a toast sort of thing. And he said he started off by saying, when he came in the village, you could see there was a lot of important people about, because the flag was flying from the church tower. Anyhow, he said, I'll tell you one little story, he said, before we start. There was this guardsman on duty, Windsor Great Park, and he got put on a charge for deserting his post. He said, an unforgettable sin in the army, he said, and he rolled up the next day in front of the officer of the day. Then the charge was read out, deserted his post in the line of duty. Then he looked up and he said, Sergeant, he said, a man of your experience, he said, deserting his post, he said, there surely must be some explanation. Would you like to tell me? He said, well, sir, I don't know whether you'll believe this or not, he said, but I was on the last sentry box, he said, before you get to the Great Park, he said, and I'd been there an hour, minding my own business, he said, nothing happened. He said, and I caught a couple of squirrels, he said, in the oak tree opposite, playing about in there, he said, and finally one come down the trunk, run round the trunk, come hopping across the road. He said, smelt all round my boots, he said, went up my trousers leg, he said, and I never moved. He said, his mate must have smelt where he'd gone, his ankle, he'd come down the tree, come hopping across the road, he said, he went up my other trousers leg. He said, and I still didn't move. He said, it went like I heard one say to the other, shall we have him now, leave him till Christmas? He said, I thought it was about time I'd bugger it off. Once at Pannington, and I looked out, I've got a carriage all to myself, and I looked up the station, down the platform came a couple of red caps with a bloke between them. So I thought, Christ, some poor bugger they've collared. Anyhow, they came by my carriage, and when I walked back, he said, you in there alone, Jack? I said, yeah. Oh, well, we'll come in here. He said, oh, well, we'll come in here, come on. And I went and moved up the corner and seen these three come in and they plonked this prisoner down between them. And I looked at them and I said, bloody, I was a boy I went to school with. I said, blast, that's gangster. He said, well, that's bloody Ruggles. They said, you don't mean to tell me you two know one another? I said, yeah, we went to school together. I said, what are you doing here? So one on Pope Basil, his name was, in the ribs, he said, go on, tell them what you've done. The gangster looked at him, slewed his eyes at him. He said, I was a dispatch rider, weren't I? I said, yes. And what he said, you were a dispatch rider? He said, well. He said, go on, tell him what you done. He said, I flogged my motorbike. And he came on it.